ACIP, the voice of interventional pain management.
The ACIP podcast is sponsored by Medtronic, your partner in personalized pain solutions for patients with musculoskeletal pain, cancer pain, severe spasticity, or chronic pain. To learn more about Medtronic solutions, call 888-638-7627 or visit back.com. The ACIP podcast is also sponsored by Boston Scientific. In a registry of 800 patients, 72% of patients used multiple waveforms when given the option. Boston Scientific's Precision Spectra SCS system offers customized pain relief, delivering multiple waveforms to a precise neural target. You want options? Boston Scientific delivers. Welcome once again to the ACIP podcast. This is Tom Prigge, and on this edition of the podcast, we'll hear the story of Dr. John Bonica, one of the pioneers of pain medicine. And you probably know Dr. Bonica's name, but do you know his life story? In the new segment, we'll learn about medical student burnout, a pain treatment that comes from spiders, a spice that might prevent liver damage caused by acetaminophen, and much more. Well, ICD-10-CM is here, and there isn't anything anyone can do about it except learn how to work with it. To make life easier and promote seamless navigation with ICD-10-CM, ACIP has developed a comprehensive, practical pocket guide for ICD-10-CM coding for interventional pain physicians. Designed for interventional pain physicians and their staff, this pocket guide goes beyond basic ICD-10-CM coding and helps to promote seamless navigation through 2016 and beyond. The book is made up of four sections: basics, diseases and disorders, interventional techniques, and appendices. Now, I don't have time to run through the entire table of contents, but let's take a look at the appendices. There are 14 of them, and they cover the following: lumbosacral spinal coding, codes for cervical spinal coding, codes for thoracic spinal coding. There's an appendix with codes for fractures, another one with codes for arthritis and inflammatory conditions. Other appendices include ones for non-spinal conditions, another for headaches and facial pain, codes for musculoskeletal disorders, one for abdominal pain, another appendix for psychological disorders, an appendix for drug abuse and dependency, and finally, codes for medical disorders, codes for miscellaneous coding, and codes for implantables. Now, copies are only $250 for either the print or electronic version, or you can get both in a package deal for just $400. To order, go to our website. That's ACIP.org, ASIPP.org. The ACIP podcast is sponsored in part by StimWave, maker of the Freedom Spinal Cord Stimulation System. To find out more about the Freedom Spinal Cord System, go to www.stimwave.com. And by St. Jude Medical, makers of spinal cord stimulation and radiofrequency therapy products. Visit them at professional.sjm.com. Up next, the amazing story of Dr. John Bonica. It is the audio portion of a lecture that is part of the TED series of talks available at www.ted.com. and used by permission as part of the TED Creative Commons license. Now, you are no doubt aware of Dr. Bonica's Management of Pain. It's now in its fourth edition. You probably have a copy on your bookshelf. Well, the story of Dr. John Bonica is coming up next here on the ACIP podcast.
TED Talks are recorded live at the TED Conference and partner events. This episode features radio researcher Latif Nasser. This talk contains powerful visuals. Download the video at TED.com. Here's Latif Nasser.
A few years ago, my mom developed rheumatoid arthritis. Her wrists, knees, and toes swelled up, causing crippling chronic pain. She had to file for disability. She stopped attending our local mosque. Some mornings, it was too painful for her to brush her teeth. I wanted to help, but I didn't know how. I'm not a doctor. So what I am is a historian of medicine. So I started to research the history of chronic pain. Turns out UCLA has an entire history of pain collection in their archives. And I found a story, a fantastic story, of a man who rescued millions of people from pain, people like my mom. Yet I'd never heard of him. There were no biographies of him, no Hollywood movies. His name was John J. Bonica. But when our story begins, he was better known as Johnny Bull Walker. It was a summer day in 1941. The circus had just arrived in the tiny town of Brookfield, New York. Spectators flocked to see the wire walkers, the tramp clowns, if they were lucky, the human cannonball. They also came to see the strongman, Johnny Bull Walker, a brawny bully who'd pin you for a dollar. Now, on that particular day, a voice rang out over the circus PA system. They needed a doctor urgently in the live animal tent. Something had gone wrong with the lion tamer. The climax of his act had gone wrong, and his head was stuck inside the lion's mouth. He was running out of air. The crowd watched in horror as he struggled and then passed out. When the lion finally did relax its jaws, the lion tamer just slumped to the ground, motionless. When he came to a few minutes later, he saw a familiar figure hunched over him. It was Bull Walker. The strong man had given the lion tamer mouth to mouth and saved his life. Now, the strong man hadn't told anyone, but he was actually a third-year medical student. He toured with the circus during summers to pay tuition, but kept it a secret to protect his persona. He was supposed to be a brute, a villain, not a nerdy do-gooder. His medical colleagues didn't know his secret either. As he put it, if you were an athlete, you were a dumb dodo. So he didn't tell them about the circus or about how he wrestled professionally on evenings and weekends. He used a pseudonym like Bull Walker or later the Masked Marvel. He even kept it a secret that same year when he was crowned the light heavyweight champion of the world. Over the years, John J. Bonica lived these parallel lives. He was a wrestler. He was a doctor. He was a heel. He was a hero. He inflicted pain, and he treated it. And he didn't know it at the time, but over the next five decades, he'd draw on these dueling identities to forge a whole new way to think about pain. It'd change modern medicine, so much so that decades later, Time magazine would call him pain relief's founding father. But that all happened later. In 1942, Bonica graduated medical school and married Emma, his sweetheart, whom he had met at one of his matches years before. He still wrestled in secret. He had to. His internship at New York St. Vincent's Hospital paid nothing. With his championship belt, he wrestled in big-ticket venues like Madison Square Garden against big-time opponents like Everett the Blonde Bear Marshall or three-time world champion Angelo Savoldi. The matches took a toll on his body. He tore hip joints, fractured ribs, One night, the terrible Turk's big toe scratched a scar like Capone's down the side of his face. The next morning at work, he had to wear a surgical mask to hide it. Twice, Bonica showed up to the OR with one eye so bruised he couldn't see out of it. But worst of all were his mangled cauliflower ears. He said they felt like two baseballs on the sides of his head. Pain just kept accumulating in his life. Next, he watched his wife go into labor at his hospital. She heaved and pushed, clearly in anguish. Her obstetrician called out to the intern on duty to give her a few drops of ether to ease her pain. But the intern was a young guy, just 3 weeks on the job. He was jittery, and in applying the ether, irritated Emma's throat. She vomited and choked and started to turn blue. Bonica, who was watching all this, pushed the intern out of the way, cleared her airway, and saved his wife and his unborn daughter. At that moment, he decided to devote his life to anesthesiology. Later, he'd even go on to help develop the epidural for delivering mothers. But before he could focus on obstetrics, Bonica had to report for basic training. Right around D-Day, Bonica showed up to Madigan Army Medical Center near Tacoma. At 7,700 beds, it was one of the largest Army hospitals in America. Bonica was in charge of all pain control there. He was only 27. Treating so many patients, Bonica started noticing cases that contradicted everything he had learned. Pain was supposed to be a kind of alarm bell, in a good way, a body's way of signaling an injury, like a broken arm. But in some cases, like after a patient had a leg amputated, that patient might still complain of pain in that non-existent leg. But if the injury had been treated, why would the alarm bell keep ringing? There were other cases in which there was no evidence of an injury whatsoever, and yet still, the patient hurt. Bonica tracked down all the specialists at his hospital, surgeons, neurologists, psychiatrists, others, and he tried to get their opinions on his patients. It took too long, so he started organizing group meetings over lunch. It would be like a tag team of specialists going up against the patient's pain. No one had ever focused on pain this way before. After that, he hit the books. He read every medical textbook he could get his hands on, carefully noting every mention of the word pain. Out of the 14,000 pages he read, the word pain was on 17 and a half of them. 17 and a half for the most basic, most common, most frustrating part of being a patient. Bonica was shocked. I'm quoting him. He said, "What the hell kind of conclusion can you come to there? The most important thing from the patient's perspective, they don't talk about." So over the next 8 years, Bonica would talk about it. He'd write about it. He'd write those missing pages. He wrote what would later be known as the Bible of Pain. In it, he proposed new strategies, new treatments using nerve block injections. He proposed a new institution, the Pain Clinic, based on those lunchtime meetings. But the most important thing about his book was that it was a kind of emotional alarm bell for medicine, a desperate plea to doctors to take pain seriously in patients' lives. He recast the very purpose of medicine. The goal wasn't to make patients better. It was to make patients feel better. He pushed his pain agenda for decades before it finally took hold in the mid-70s. Hundreds of pain clinics sprung up all over the world. But as they did, a tragic twist. Bonica's years of wrestling caught up to him. He had been out of the ring for over 20 years, but those 1,500 professional bouts had left a mark on his body. Still in his mid-50s, he suffered severe osteoarthritis. Over the next 20 years, he'd have 22 surgeries, including 4 spine operations and hip replacement after hip replacement. He could barely raise his arm, turn his neck. He needed aluminum crutches to walk. His friends and former students became his doctors. One recalled that he probably had more nerve block injections than anyone else on the planet. Already a workaholic, he worked even more, 15 to 18 hour days. Healing others became more than just his job, it was his own most effective form of relief. If I wasn't as busy as I am, he told a reporter at the time, I would be a completely disabled guy. On a business trip to Florida in the early 1980s, Bonica got a former student to drive him to the Hyde Park area in Tampa. They drove past palm trees and pulled up to an old mansion with giant silver howitzer cannons hidden in the garage. The house belonged to the Zucchini family, who were something like American circus royalty. Decades earlier, Bonica had watched them clad in silver jumpsuits and goggles doing the act they pioneered, the human cannonball. But now they were like him, retired. That generation is all dead now, including Bonica, so there's no way to know exactly what they said that day. But still, I love imagining it. The strongman and the human cannonballs reunited, showing off old scars and new ones. Maybe Bonica gave them medical advice. Maybe he told them what he later said in an oral history, which is that his time in the circus and wrestling deeply molded his life. Bonica saw pain close up. He felt it. He lived it. And it made it impossible for him to ignore in others. Out of that empathy, he spun a whole new field, played a major role in getting medicine to acknowledge pain in and of itself. In that same oral history, Bonica claimed that pain is the most complex human experience, that it involves your past life, your current life, your interactions, your family. That was definitely true for Bonica, but it was also true for my mom. It's easy for doctors to see my mom as a kind of professional patient, a woman who just spends her days in waiting rooms. Sometimes I get stuck seeing her that same way. But as I saw Bonica's pain, a testament to his fully lived life, I started to remember all the things that my mom's pain holds. Before they got swollen and arthritic, my mom's fingers clacked away in the hospital HR department where she worked. They folded samosas for our entire mosque. When I was a kid, they cut my hair, wiped my nose, tied my shoes. Thank you.
That was Latif Nasser, recorded at TED 2015 in Vancouver, British Columbia, March 2015. For more information on TED, visit TED.com.
The ACIP podcast is sponsored by Boston Scientific. In a registry of 800 patients, 72% of patients used multiple waveforms when given the option. Boston Scientific's Precision Spectra SCS system offers customized pain relief, delivering multiple waveforms to a precise neural target. You want options? Boston Scientific delivers. The ACIP podcast is also sponsored by Medtronic, your partner in personalized pain solutions for patients with musculoskeletal pain, cancer pain, severe spasticity, or chronic pain. To learn more about Medtronic solutions, call 888-638-7627 or visit back.com. It's time for the news segment of the podcast where we report pain and general medical news that you might have missed. The differences between men and women evidently extend to neck pain. A study done by Loyola Medicine's Pain Management Center reports that of their patients, women are 1.38 times more likely than men to present with neck pain due to cervical degenerative disc disease. In the past, studies have reported that it is more common for women to have migraines and fibromyalgia. A similar study done by Loyola found lumbosacral degenerative disease's prevalence not to be statistically significant when comparing women and men. There have been articles and studies about physician burnout, but what about medical student burnout? Mayo Clinic researchers writing in the journal Academic Medicine report that med school students are more likely to abuse alcohol than others their age. The ones most prone to abusing alcohol are med students who are young, single, and have a large debt load. 12,500 medical students were surveyed, and of those who responded, one-third were determined to have experienced clinical alcohol abuse or dependence. Now, that's double the percentage of those the same age who are not in medical school, and is also double the rate of alcohol abuse for surgeons, physicians, and the public in general. Regarding debt load, the researchers report that those who graduated with a medical degree in 2014 had an average education debt load of $180,000. And this might be our first dental story on the ACIP podcast. Wouldn't it be great if we could take a pill and not worry about ever having cavities? That day might be here sooner than we think. Scientists at the University of Florida have discovered a particular bacterium in the mouth that works against the bacterium that causes tooth decay. This beneficial bacterium is a strain of Streptococcus A12. Their findings were published in the journal Applied and Environmental Microbiology. The researchers recently received a 5-year grant worth $3 million to study A12 and other bacteria in the mouth. The grant came from the U.S. National Institute of Dental and Craniofacial Research. Not enough is being done to reduce fatalities in percutaneous coronary interventions. That is the conclusion of research from the universities of Kiel and Manchester in the United Kingdom. They examined the records of nearly 500,000 patients who had stents placed either transfemorally, or through the leg, or transradially, through the wrist, from the years 2005 through 2012. They found that the transradial approach increased over those years from 14% to 58%, leading to an estimated 450 lives saved. Lead researcher and cardiology professor Dr. Mamas A. Mamas wrote, quote, "It is clear from the research that performing PCI through the transradial route is safer and less invasive for patients." Their full report was published in the journal Circulation. Their findings build on research they previously conducted showing that PCI via a radial approach is associated with a 30% reduction in mortality risk in high-risk patients. Spending on prescription drugs keeps going up. That's certainly no surprise, but just saying that spending is going up doesn't tell the whole story. According to the Associated Press, Americans increased their spending on prescriptions by 5% in 2015. However, that increase, 5%, was just half the size of the increase from the previous year. Quoting sources at Express Scripts Holding Company, the largest prescription management company in the U.S., the Associated Press reported that the average price of brand-name drugs nearly doubled from 2011 to 2015. Express Scripts expects drug spending to increase 6-8% per year for the next 2 years. Specialty drugs for rheumatoid arthritis and psoriasis led the way with the most spending. Spiders are some of the most malign little creatures. However, a spider native to South America might hold the key to a new pain treatment. Australian researchers have isolated a toxin in the Peruvian green velvet tarantula that inhibits the peptide toxin known as ProTX2. Now, ProTX2 inhibits pain signals by binding to the membranes of nerve cells. Based on this finding, the researchers are now at work designing new toxins that they hope will have fewer side effects than other treatments. Have you ever heard of bipaternal twins? Not many people have because it's extremely rare. Bipaternal twins are twins who have different fathers. It happens when two eggs are fertilized by two different men during separate acts of intercourse. It was discovered to have happened recently in Vietnam when twins looked vastly different from each other. The twins were born on the same day and were the same sex. Genetic tests proved that the babies had different fathers. A case of bipaternal twins went to court in the United States in 2015, resulting in a judgment that each father was only responsible for child support for his own child. The cardiovascular risk associated with NSAIDs is well established, and I'll have a story on that in just a moment, but what about SSRIs? A new study from the United Kingdom's University of Nottingham has answered that question, whether SSRIs or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors have any cardiovascular risks. In a word, no. According to the report published in the BMJ, not only is this class of antidepressant not harmful cardiovascularly, some of the drugs, in particular one, fluoxetine, better known as Prozac, were associated with a reduced risk of heart attacks. One of the authors, Professor Carol Copeland, said, "Our study found no evidence that selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors were associated with an increased risk of arrhythmia, heart attacks, or stroke transient ischemic attacks in people with depression over the 5-year period. But there was a significant doubling of risk for arrhythmia during the first 4 weeks of taking tricyclic and related antidepressants." And when it comes to NSAIDs, cardiac risk is known to exist, but no one has ever known why. Scientists at the University of California at Davis have discovered why NSAIDs are harmful to the heart. Using mice and rat cardiac cells, they found that NSAIDs attack mitochondria, reducing the cardiac cell's ability to produce energy. They cause the production of reactive oxygen species, which stress heart cells, and they impair the cardiac cell's proteasome, leading to a toxic buildup of harmful proteins, eventually leading to the death of the cardiac cells. Now, the researchers suggest that taking an antioxidant, such as vitamin C, before taking an NSAID might prevent cardiac cell death while still allowing the NSAID to give a patient pain relief. The study was published online in the Journal of Molecular and Cellular Cardiology. And finally, the spice curcumin has been shown to be hepatoprotective against acetaminophen-induced damage in mice. Curcumin, a member of the ginger family, is sold as an herbal supplement, added to cosmetics, used to flavor food, and is used as a food coloring. The curcumin prevented mitochondrial changes and, in a dose-dependent manner, prevented acetaminophen-induced liver damage by lessening histological damage. The study was published in the Journal of Pharmacy and Pharmacology. The ACIP podcast is sponsored in part by St. Jude Medical, makers of spinal cord stimulation and radiofrequency therapy products. Visit them at professional.sjm.com. And by StimWave, maker of the Freedom Spinal Cord Stimulation System. Find out more about the Freedom Spinal Cord System at www.stimwave.com. Well, we're going to end this podcast with this story from the United Press International News Service. There is now a website that sells fake doctor's notes to help customers get out of work or school or any other commitment they want to shirk. A 100% no questions asked refund guarantee is even offered. Now, the website is called bestfakedoctorsnotes.net. It offers phony excuses claiming to be from a doctor, dentist, or other healthcare provider. If someone tries to verify that the notes are real, a pre-recorded message will play when someone calls the fake doctor's office's telephone number. Quotes from satisfied customers are on the website and on YouTube. There are even video testimonials of happy customers praising how real-looking the phony notes are. The customers' faces are discreetly blurred out to preserve their anonymity and probably their jobs, too. Well, that's it for another ASIP podcast. This is Tom Prigge. We'd like to hear from you. I'd like to hear from you. Just send me an email, tom@asip.org, ASIPP.org, tom@asip.org. Let me know what you think about the podcast. And if you have any ideas for a topic or someone to interview, a person that you think would make a great interview, just let me know in the email. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join us again for another ASIP podcast.